Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen. In this election season, we are broadcasting parts of all forums for county candidates in Story and Boone counties. Story County forums were sponsored by the Ames League of Women Voters, and their last forum was held at the Ames Public Library on October 29th with candidates for Story County Treasurer, Recorder, and Attorney. We will only present the opening statements of each candidate, except for Story County Treasurer, which has opposing candidates, so we'll give them each a chance to answer one question. Because the listening area for KHOI is largely rural, we are also airing short statements by each of the candidates for Secretary of Agriculture. Incumbent Republican Mike Naig, Democrat Tim Gannon, and Libertarian Rick Stewart.
Welcome to the Ames Public Library and the forum for candidates running for Story County Treasurer, Recorder, and Attorney. My name is Mary Sand. I'm a member of the League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County and the moderator for this forum. For those of you who might not be familiar with the League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan political organization with a primary mission of encouraging informed and active citizen participation in their government. In that vein, I'd like to thank all the candidates and all of you here in the audience for your participation. The forum this evening will be divided into three sections. First will be the candidates' opening statements. Secondly, questions from you, the audience. And finally, closing statements from the candidates as time allows. If there are questions yet to be asked as the 8:30 hour approaches, audience questions will take priority over closing remarks. The candidates joining us today are for Story County Treasurer Renee Tweet, Republican and incumbent. Her challenger for Story County Treasurer, Democrat Ted Rasmussen. For Story County Recorder, Stacy Herridge, Republican and incumbent. And for Story County Attorney, Democrat Jessica Reynolds, also incumbent. Stacy and Jessica are the sole candidates. Candidates, please try to limit your opening remarks to 5 minutes each. And notice Judy here in the front row is our timekeeper. All right. We will start with Renee.
Good evening. It's nice to see everybody here. Thanks for coming. Thanks to the League for hosting this, as they always do, to keep everybody informed on the community of what's going on and to get all of us candidates out there. I am the current Story County Treasurer, Renee Tweet. I have over 30 years of experience in accounting, management, auditing, and taxes, of which eight of those has been as your county treasurer. I was also elected to office in 2010. I ran simultaneously as your county auditor. Story County office is and has been rated as 100% efficiency for the 8 years that I have been in office. I have set annual records with our tax sale, tax collections, and I have implemented the real-time data exchange between the county server and our software. The treasurer's office now collects, besides motor vehicle and property taxes, I have opened the door to collect clerk of court, Department of Revenue, Department of Management, and recently we did a 28E agreement to be able to collect delinquent parking tickets. I have strived and will continue to do the best efficient that I can for this one-stop shop of the citizens and continue to provide excellent customer service. I look forward to your questions.
Thank you, Renee. Ted?
Okay, thank you. Thank you to the League. The work the League does is very important. They do a great job, you know, educating voters, getting people out and involved, and definitely a great job registering young voters. So I want to thank you guys for that, and thank you all for coming. County government sometimes is not considered the most exciting thing, so I'm glad you guys all chose your Monday night to come spend with us and learn more about us as candidates and the offices. So my name is Ted Rasmussen. I grew up on a century farm on the east of Colo on the east side of the county. I spent my educational career at Colonesco High School, where I was involved in about every extracurricular there was. I went on to Simpson College and got my degree there in history and political science. And after graduating from Simpson, came back to Story County, met my lovely wife, Amanda, and she and I have now been married for 11 years with a four-year-old daughter, and we are back out on the county, or out on the Century Farm east of Colo again. In the meantime, we both achieved Master's of Public Administration degrees at Drake University, and I have spent the last 12 years working at EMC Insurance down in Des Moines, been a project manager and business analyst. In my time at EMC, I've led corporate level teams, company-wide initiatives, and large projects. The primary ones were a deductible billing system to automate our deductible billing for workers' comp policies. Also, I led an expense system project where we replaced our company's homegrown expense system with a purchased expense system for employee expenses, whether they're traveling or when they're out meeting with agents and insureds. I also led our corporate-wide team for our work comp collaboration, which took cross-departmental approach with five of the main departments in the company to really approach how we could do a better job with our work comp line of business. And the other large project I led was a personal lines coordinated effort to move all of our personal lines business within Des Moines from 17 branch offices. So those are some of the major projects I've been on. I also spent 5 years working on the Sarbanes-Oxley compliance team. I was actually coordinating our corporate-wide effort to do our quarterly reporting and our annual reporting to the FEC. That's SOX is a financial compliance law that basically tracks all of the cash flow through a business. And if it's a public traded company, you have to report how you controlled that cash flow, detected fraud, and ensured that investors had their money safe. That's really my educational experience. Why I'm running is a question I get a lot. I've done a lot of campaigning. I wore through a new pair of sandals. I will have to get a new pair of sandals for next summer. Knocked on roughly 5,500 doors in Story County. I see a couple familiar faces. I'm not sure how many of you have knocked on your door. But basically, I want to meet people and help people. My grandfather was mayor of Colo for 27 years. He served the public. He very much instilled that public service and involvement into me. And it's been a lifelong goal of mine to serve the public. It's why I got that degree in political science, why I got my master's in public administration, and really something that I've been looking forward to. I really intended to run as soon as my wife and I moved back to the family farm, but we had a 140-year-old farmhouse to fix up, so 2012 was not a good year. In 2014, we had a five-month-old child, so it was not a good year to start a campaign. In 2016, I was in the midst of chemotherapy treatments, so it was not a good year. And 2016, personally, I did not like the way that election went. I did not like the way that our country, our state, and even our county has gone since the year 2016. So I really wanted to get involved. And the treasurer's office matches up very well with my work experience, with my educational background. So I'm very excited to run for the office and to meet all you guys and answer questions tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Ted. Stacy?
My name is Stacy Harridge, and I want to thank the League also for hosting this event and the Ames Public Library. I haven't been in this room before, and it's very nice and cozy, we said, Jessica and I. Like I said, I am the Story County Recorder. This is my first term, but I'm not new to Story County. I've worked for Story County for 21 years, and I love the county, grew up in Story County, decided to raise my family in Story County, so I feel honored to be able to serve the residents of Story County. I keep saying that. It's like I should get a dollar for every time I say Story County. But actually, my background is I went to Nevada High School, graduated, went to UNI, and got a bachelor's degree in management, moved home, met my husband, got married, and started at the county in the recorder's office. We've seen a lot of growth in our county, and the recorder's office really does is a direct correlation with that growth. We see a lot of documents recorded, sales, home sales, real estate, and we are so fortunate to have a county recorder's office that our revenues far exceed our expenses every year. So budgeting, meeting with the Board of Supervisors every year, we are very fortunate to have such a growing, strong county. I try to stay involved. I have three children. Sammy is 14, Carter is 16, and Jack is 11. My husband owns a small business, and he just actually started working for the county as the drainage superintendent. So I'm very busy, and I am also involved in the Nevada Booster Club Board. I'm the co-treasurer. I try to help out with the American Business Women's Association. I just celebrated 25 years with that organization. Now I'm serving as the vice president. Do a little bit of help with my church, and I'm also involved with, there's an advisory commission with the Nevada School District. So I try to stay involved. As far as the past 4 years in the recorder's office, we have a really strong Iowa County Recorder Association, and I'm serving now as our District 1 president. It's really important to have a lot of peers that you can talk with, and I feel like I'm a good voice for Central Iowa, so I really look to collaborate with those other recorders and also the other elected officials. We have a lot of good, strong leadership in Story County right now with our Board of Supervisors, and that trickles down to us elected officials and department heads. I've done a lot in the past 4 years, but I'm looking forward to the future. I think the two main points that I'd like to bring up is that we're trying to save the county taxpayer money, and we converted to a new real estate recording management system that's saving the county roughly about $33,000 a year. And not only is that saving the county, but it's also being able to talk and correlate with the other real estate offices. So I'm very, very proud of that. I feel I'm very fiscally responsible, and I work really hard to provide the best customer service that we can. And I hear that all the time. We get kudos and accolades from our constituents and real estate agents, attorneys. So you always have a helpful, friendly smile when you come into our office, and I really take pride in that. I think that's all for right now.
All right, thank you. Jessica?
Well, good evening, everyone. My name is Jessica Reynolds, and I'm the Story County Attorney, and I'd like to echo everyone's sentiments and thank the League of Women Voters for hosting this forum tonight. It's very important. I'd also like to thank each and every one of you for taking the time out of your busy nights to come here and listen to us and ask questions. And I'd like to particularly thank my husband, Chris, who's in the front row, and my daughter, Ava, who's in the front row, for coming here tonight. Ava did want to attend. I did not make her come. She really said she wanted to come, so we'll see if she is glad that she did or not at the end of the night. A little background on me. I'm a career prosecutor who's devoted my life to public service. I started prosecuting right out of law school. Have prosecuted in two other Iowa counties, and then a decade ago I was hired at the Story County Attorney's Office. I started out doing criminal prosecution in the Story County Attorney's Office, and then I was promoted to head the juvenile docket in our office. There were some changes that needed to be made to that docket, and so my boss promoted me to institute policies and procedures for our office that would make children safer in Story County. After I was done doing that, I was then promoted to the civil docket in the Story County Attorney's Office, and while I was doing civil work for the office, I was made first assistant Story County Attorney. That was in 2013, and so my management experience started in the office. Then in 2016, my boss retired, and I applied for his vacancy. And September 30th, 2016, I was appointed by a unanimous vote of the Story County Supervisors. It was a bipartisan group. So it's been 2 years that I've been the Story County Attorney, and things are going wonderfully in our office. It's been a very smooth transition. We've been extraordinarily busy. It's a very busy office. In 2017, we filed 12,634 criminal cases. We filed 221 juvenile cases, 244 mental health or substance abuse committals, and we resolved 242 civil matters. My office is busy, as you can tell from those statistics. I have 14 attorneys that I supervise. I have 10 staff that I supervise and 5 interns. The mission statement of my office is simple, but it's extremely important. I have it posted on our wall. We follow the law and we do the right thing. And those are extremely important tools and statements that we use to guide ourselves in the way that we interact with the public, with defendants, and with our civil clients. As the Story County Attorney, I oversee a $2.3 million budget. I've worked hard in my 2 years to strengthen my communication and relationship with law enforcement. I've worked hard to strengthen the office's relationship with our civil clients. I have also increased the services offered by our victim witness program, and I'm proud to say that I have 2 test cases that I'm testing out in a mental health court, which we sorely need in our jurisdiction, and I'm very excited about that work. I've also attempted to make things more transparent by engaging in social media usage and with the press more than our office had in the past. I do this carefully, of course, always making sure that I'm abiding by my prosecutorial ethics. I think it's important that the public be aware of all the work that our office does. In summary, the Story County Attorney's Office is strong and well-led. I'm able to fulfill my mission every day. The reason that I went to law school is I wanted to make the world a better place. I wanted to help. I wanted to help make things better. And in my current role, I'm honored that I get to do that every single day. I get to help keep our citizens safe, protect our vulnerable population like our elderly and our children. I get to fight hard for justice, and I get to help crime victims heal when they've been victimized. Violence is a very serious issue in our society all over. Violence destabilizes people and it destabilizes communities. And it's imperative upon my office, law enforcement, and all of us as community members to work together to help stop violence up front when we can, or if we can't and violence occurs, which unfortunately it does, it's up to us in my office to make sure that people are brought to justice and that offenders are held accountable. So I appreciate everyone being here tonight. It's an honor to be your Story County Attorney. I so look forward to your questions and having an engaged conversation. Now, like any attorney, I come with a disclaimer, so here it is. Are you ready? Due to my prosecutorial and legal ethics, I cannot discuss specific cases that are currently being prosecuted by my office. So if you ask a question about an open case, I may have to repeat this, and I just wanted to make sure everyone's aware of that before we get started. So thank you so much for having me. I can't wait to discuss any issues you have.
All right, thank you, candidates. Thank you. Okay, audience, now it's your turn. You can ask questions, you can make comments, you can give the candidates information if you want. First thing to do when you get up there to the mic is give your name and where you live, your name and your town at least. Then questions and comments can be addressed to any one of the candidates or to all of them. Candidates, you will be taking turns, and I'll try to keep it this straight. and you'll each have 2 minutes to answer. All right? All right. So take it away, audience. First question.
I want to start this by saying I am so sick of negative ads from both parties. I just think that's not the way to do it. So what I would like you guys to tell me is what your strengths are for your office and why we should support you to do this job. I don't want you to bash each other.
Renee Tweet, Republican incumbent, county treasurer.
When I started, it was fully staffed. And since 8 years ago, I have had one full-time position taken away and one part-time position taken away, and we have continually done more with less. You are our bosses, and we try to strive and do the best we can with what we can, trying to save the taxpayer dollars. I remember sitting and arguing over $1 with the Board of Supervisors on my budget one day. It was 20 minutes over $1, but you know what? I had to fight for it. And our office, you know, it's a place I report to. It's not my office. The building is that of the people. Everybody that pays their taxes, it's their building. They can come and go, and they should be able to come and go anywhere they want to do whatever they want, you know, within reason. But I have done the ongoing prudent management of the dollars. I have tripled our investment income. And, you know, as elected officials, the treasurer's office is the last one to get anything. You know, crap rolls downhill. And by the time it gets to me, it's my name that's going on it. And it goes out to everyone. So absolutely everything has to be perfect. And my staff and myself, we strive for that 100% perfection on everything.
Ted Rasmussen, Democrat, County Treasurer candidate.
So the question was, what are our strengths? That was our question. So I would say my biggest strength is I get along very well with people. I work with people. I listen to people. I really, really look at what their needs are, and I try to fulfill their needs when I'm working with people. So another strength is I am a hard worker. I'm a very hard worker. When I went to Drake, achieved a 4.0 and was the 2010 Student of the Year because I buckled down and I wanted to do well there. And then the other thing is I'm just a very naturally curious person, and I want to learn more. I want to improve. There's a saying in the It's kind of an insider term, but agile software development, to always be learning. And that's something that we say in our office a lot. Always be learning. Always be getting better. Always be improving. And, you know, you just have to ask questions and figure out how you can get better. And then one last strength is I'm really good at memorizing things. So if you're on a Trivial Pursuit team, I'm your guy.
This is KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM. You have been listening to selections from the Ames League of Women Voters Candidate Forum. The second half of the program will consist of interviews with the candidates for the Secretary of Agriculture, incumbent Republican Mike Naig, Democrat Tim Gannon, and Libertarian Rick Stewart. I am interviewing the present Iowa Secretary of Agriculture, Mike Naig.
Great to be with you. Thanks for having me. And so I've been secretary since the beginning of March. So I had started as the deputy secretary under Bill Northey back in 2013. So I grew up on a farm in northwest Iowa, so Palo Alto County. I went to Emmitsburg to school, but our farm is near Cylinder, a small town. And so I grew up pretty typical upbringing, corn and soybean and hog production. Grew up in the 80s. And so when it came time to go to school, my folks were very clear with my siblings and I that we needed to go get a college degree and be able to do something off the farm because, again, that challenging time of the 80s had taught us quite a lesson. It was something to watch that process and see what my folks had to go through to keep the farm and take care of us kids as well. So I was able to then go on and work an entire career in agriculture, so in agribusiness, working for ag biz companies, working for agribusiness associations. I've worked in the private sector, but again, always had that connection to our farm. We still have our family farm today. My folks live on our home place. It's a century farm. My great-grandfather bought the farm back in 1902, and so it's a tremendous thing to have the responsibility and the opportunity to raise the fifth generation of our family involved in that operation. But again, I've always worked off of the farm, and then 5 years ago, Bill Northey called and asked if I would consider joining the team as the deputy, and really in that role, had a chance to really was responsible for the operations of the department, the budget, the personnel, the policy, managing the team, but also had a chance to travel the state as well. So, you know, Bill would go east, I would go west, he would go north, I'd go south. We'd cover a lot of ground. And so I always consider those 4.5 years that I served as the deputy were a tremendous experience builder for me. But being on the job, and again, I was able to really step into the role and hit the ground running when the governor appointed me.
Well, what is the work of the Secretary of Agriculture besides traveling around the state?
You bet. So really the job of the secretary is to represent all aspects of Iowa agriculture. So, you know, the way the agency kind of breaks down is about half of the staff at the agency is devoted to soil conservation and water quality. And so really leading the effort to implement Iowa's nutrient reduction strategy to improve water quality, leading our effort on providing cost share and programs for farmers to prevent soil erosion through soil conservation programs. That's an important part of the job, is to really be looking after and promoting responsible use of our natural resources, right? If we're going to stay productive and in this state, we've got to take care of our natural resources and do it sustainably. You know, the other part of the job is to manage the regulatory and the consumer protection parts of the department. So maybe the most visible thing that folks might know would be looking for that little sticker on the gas pump that says inspected by the Department of Agriculture. It's our Weights and Measures Bureau. But we have Pesticide Bureau, Fertilizer, Grain Warehouse, the Weights and Measures group. Our animal industries, our state veterinarian works for me as well. And so really managing those programs. So that's maybe the operational piece of the job. But then on the other side of things would be promoting our products from a trade standpoint, opening markets, receiving trade delegations. That's an important part, really being the chief ag marketer of the state of Iowa. And then I think the other piece, and it's certainly something that I've spent a significant amount of time on this past year, and that is advocating for our farmers and businesses at the federal level on issues that are important. So trade, the renewable fuels standard, the farm bill, those are all things that really we need to make sure that we're representing Iowa's interests in that process. So I like to say, the traveling that I do, the visiting all 99 counties, that I do is critically important to all those other pieces, because I have to understand what folks are dealing with across the state. I have to go out and connect with folks, hear what their challenges are, hear what's going well, and then bring those things back and apply them to the things that we're doing at the department or the things that I can go then advocate for.
And do you work at all with farmers, with small farmers who are not doing row crops?
Oh, absolutely. One of our bureaus is actually the market development. So we look at, things developing farm to fork, working with our specialty crop producers. We actually certify about half of our organic operations in the state of Iowa are certified by the Iowa Department of Agriculture. So, we try to work with really producers of all kinds, of all sizes, and it's one of those things that we absolutely take very, very seriously. And we know that there's tremendous opportunity for diversity in Iowa agriculture. And we need to always remember, too, we have an aging farmer population in this state. And so what are the opportunities for our young people to come back into operations, maybe for a young person to get started in agriculture? And some of these more diverse options might be more cost effective, or might be something that's a little easier for folks to get involved in. And so we're always looking to support those types of opportunities as well.
And do you have any special relationship with small towns? Is worrying about the small town economy part of your job?
Well, I think not directly, but I will tell you that agriculture is such a significant driver of our economy in the state of Iowa that if we want to maintain a healthy economy, especially in our rural communities, our small communities, towns across this state, we need to have a thriving agriculture. We need to have value-added agriculture, right? It's not just that we produce a lot of corn and soybeans. Those are commodity products. So our ability to really drive value back to those communities is to add value, through livestock, through renewable fuels production, through, other opportunities to, again, further process or, to again, create more value that ultimately goes back to our communities. So I view that as a responsibility of mine, is to ensure that we're growing our agriculture, mm-hmm. that we have a thriving agriculture. And that will help communities all across the
state. For parks.
Development, yes. For infrastructure, for parks, yes. So, that's absolutely something. Very much been a good discussion about that. Voters did approve the trust fund. However, they did not approve the sales tax increase at that time. It was left to the legislature and the governor to do that. I'll only look at really the piece that impacts the operation that I oversee, and that's water quality. To date, I have favored funding our efforts around water quality within our existing state budget. You know, you've got a $7 billion-plus budget, and I think we always have to prioritize. And so to date, we've been able to prioritize spending on water quality in, I think, a very reasonable way. So this past legislative session, we secured for the first time long-term dedicated funding, $282 million over the next 12 years. The first time that we've had that predictability in our funding. Otherwise, it's been year-to-year general fund appropriations. And so I'm very comfortable with where we are. But I also have said many times, this is not the last conversation that we're going to have about water quality. And I don't believe that the answer to every problem is a tax increase. So I think that we need to keep that in mind. The discussion that will be had around what to do with the sales tax will continue. I look at the fact that 3/8 of a penny would go to this trust fund, but there's going to be a lot of discussion about the 5/8. And so I would never rule it out that I don't support it. But what I would say is I would want to understand what that entire package looked like before I could support it. So that conversation will continue. I'm sure of that. But what I'm proud of is that we've seen great progress. We've got this dedicated funding that is coming for water quality. Our efforts at the department now are focused on how do we scale up implementation of conservation practices around the state? How do we build the capacity to work with our farmers and landowners to put practices on the ground and make sure that we have a great return on the investment of whatever public dollars we do put into that system?
Will this new fund that you have just passed, what is it being spent for?
You bet. So for the way those dollars come is roughly half of those dollars go to the DNR to work with the point sources. So cities and industries across the state who are looking to reduce their nutrient loss, about half of that comes to the Department of Agriculture to work with in the urban and the rural non-point landscape. And so what we are looking at doing is we'll maintain our existing conservation effort of working with farmers in their fields on management practices like cover crops, switching to no-till, the traditional soil conservation efforts, terraces, grass waterways, those types of things. That will continue. The new dollars, we really do need to focus those dollars in some targeted watersheds, and we will really look at practices that are designed specifically for nitrate removal. So we're looking at things like wetlands and bioreactors and saturated buffers. We can't get spread too thin. So what we're going to start doing is really focusing on three of our targeted watersheds. And one is the North Raccoon, one is the South Skunk, and one is the Middle Cedar. We'll actually put people on the ground to go out there and play a little offense here, right? Go out and knock on doors, work with landowners, work with our farmers to implement practices, but really try to scale up. You know, we've gone from demonstrating practices in small watersheds. Now we need to work in the bigger watersheds, and that's what these dollars are going towards.
I'm here with Tim Gannett, Democratic candidate for Secretary of Agriculture. And I'd like to start off by just asking you to tell us a little about yourself. And
grown up around agriculture all my life, farmed with my dad and a cousin on a family century farm now. And I spent 8 years working for Secretary Vilsack at USDA in a variety of jobs. So I think I have the practical experience and the knowledge about policy that's important to agriculture that would make me a really good Secretary of Agriculture. And I think we need a person who's going to stand up for Iowa's farmers and rural communities, no matter what political party is in control and Washington, D.C., and I'm not sure we've got that happening right now.
Where do you think the Iowa Secretary of Agriculture can make a difference in the policies that come out of Washington?
Well, I think Iowans can make a difference when they vote November 6th. I think if they vote for folks who are going to stand up for Iowa farmers, no matter what administration, political party might be, then they'll be better served. I think we've got to get Washington, D.C. to understand that the trade policy and the biofuels policy that they've been pursuing have been bad for Iowa agriculture because they've pushed prices down and kept prices down. And we know if that goes on long term, that will have a really detrimental effect on all of Iowa's economy, from small town, small businesses that depend on farmers and local banks that lend to farmers up through our manufacturing sectors like John Deere and Case, that depend on farmers doing well, all the way up to the state budget. Iowa state researchers have said that with the loss in farm income because of low prices from the trade disputes, we're probably going to see a loss of $110 million in revenue to the state. And that's, you know, if you follow the state budget the last couple of years where we've had mid-year budget cuts and rising tuition to cover lack of state support for Regents Institution and rising community college tuition, you know, we haven't had an extra $110 million laying around. So that's very concerning.
What can you do within Iowa as the Secretary of Agriculture?
Well, I think we've got to do two things. We've got to invest in more research in agriculture at Iowa State. We've had a flatline budget there for the last 5 years. We've got to get back closer to where we were 15, 16 years ago. That's why I've called for the next legislature, next governor to, over the next 4 years, increase our funding by a little over $5 million total to $35 million. That will send, I think, a strong signal to the research community that the state of Iowa and Iowa State University want to continue to be at the forefront of increasing productivity, which is important because we have a growing world population, increasing that productivity while we're taking better care of the soil and water, and figuring out what are those other things that we can do with corn and beans, or what are other crops that farmers can make money growing that we can turn into value-added products and create jobs throughout rural Iowa. The other thing that I think is really important that we do is create an economy built around conservation. And to do that, we need to fund the Natural Resources and Outdoor Recreation Trust Fund, which 62% of Iowans approved creating back in 2010, but which has not been filled by the legislature and governor since then.
And how do you think that the Secretary of Agriculture or the Agriculture Department of the state of Iowa can affect soil conservation and water quality?
Well, it's the Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship, and so we've got an extremely important role in making sure that we're helping farmers do the right things in terms of conservation. A lot of times we haven't had as much money for cost-share programs as there has been demand, and so if we fill that Natural Resources and Outdoor Recreation Trust Fund, we'll have the kind of dynamic funding stream that really means we can make a difference in improving conservation practices throughout the state, working with farmers to implement more no-till, more cover crops, putting in saturated buffers and restoring wetlands where they make sense and where farmers are interested in doing that. But right now, you know, we've got our hands a little bit tied because we haven't had the funding necessary to really move the needle.
Now, is that the nutrient reduction strategy?
Yeah, the nutrient reduction strategy is what we've been using to try and roadmap a way to reduce the nitrates and phosphorus going downstream and eventually ending up in the Gulf of Mexico. And it carries a $4 to $6 billion price tag. Now, I don't think the state is ever going to be in a position to pay for the entire cost of that. But when we fill the trust fund, that'll be over $100 million in new money every year that the state will be able to put into the efforts that will help with that. That leverages, I think, probably the same amount of money or similar kind of money from USDA based on conversations I've had with people I worked with who worked in conservation at USDA. And I think that sends a strong signal to farmers and landowners that the state and federal government are going to be long-term partners with significant funding to put into this effort. And then I think you start seeing more private industry saying, okay, there's a way to be a part of this. It's going to be very successful. It's going to help us also have a good PR story out of it and make money for us. And so then we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars a year being invested in the conservation. That, I think, creates that conservation economy, which will create jobs and opportunities around the conservation work all across Iowa.
What kind of companies would buy into that?
Oh, well, if you look at Fortune 500 companies right now, almost every single one of them has some kind of sustainability effort. If you look at beverage companies like Coke and Pepsi, they're obviously and rightly concerned with both the supply and the quality of water. If you look at big companies like Walmart and Google and Microsoft, they all have some kind of sustainability platform where they're trying to do better by the air, water, and soil. You look at food companies like Cargill and Land O'Lakes, and a lot of times they're trying to figure out how do we make our supply chains more ecologically and economically sustainable. And so I think there will be a number of companies interested, knowing that they can be part of something that's a good story, that's something that's going to be successful. But a lot of times they've also figured out, okay, we can invest in this and it helps our bottom line. Sometimes they're already doing them, just maybe not yet on the scale that we need to ramp up to. Sometimes they have an idea, but they've seen their neighbors doing some things, but they haven't tried it yet. And so they need to probably attend something that a group like Practical Farmers of Iowa or Iowa State Extension is putting on for conservation practices and ways that people can take better care of their soil. You know, sometimes it's going to be, we need to figure out, okay, where have we been successful getting more practices implemented? Why were we successful in those places? And how do we replicate that in other parts of the state where we maybe haven't been as successful? You know, there are some watersheds where there's been a whole lot of work and we've seen the improvements. And then there are other watersheds where we've lagged behind. So, you know, I think you got to take a, why were we successful in some places and while we haven't been as successful as we'd like to be in other places, and figure out what works and adapt and implement.
And why do you think you are the best person to make these things happen?
Well, as I said, I will never shy away from standing up for Iowa farmers. And right now, I don't think Washington, D.C. is hearing the message when it comes to what's going on with trade policy and biofuels policy. We're looking at lower prices for corn and beans just because the EPA is not implementing the renewable fuel standard the way it should be. They're handing out waivers to oil refiners so that they don't put the ethanol and biodiesel into the fuel supply that they're obligated to. They're never reallocating those gallons, so that's destroyed demand. That means we haven't used the amount of corn and beans to make biofuel that we otherwise should have, which is pushing prices down. I don't hear any Republicans talking about that. It's very disappointing. On trade, you know, we do need to make progress with fixing the way China does business. But we've gone about it all the wrong way. We haven't rallied allies and like-minded countries to our side. We've picked trade disputes with multiple countries and trading groups at our expense, frankly. And farmers have borne the brunt of that. And we will, you know, if we don't see a quick resolution, we may never get some of those export markets back. And then on conservation, I think we need to fill the trust fund so that we have a large dynamic funding stream that we can put into the conservation practices that we know will make a difference, so we can start seeing progress on protecting our soil and water much sooner than our current trajectory. Well, what I want to see happen is, however you choose to farm, wherever you choose to farm, and whomever you think your customers might be, you can make the living you want to make, support your family in agriculture. So for some folks, that's going to be traditional Iowa row crop or livestock operations. But for those who want to be organic producers because they know that there's a premium price that they can attract and earn, or whether it's small local and regional food producers, you know, we've got to have the infrastructure for those folks so that if they're growing the best onions and radishes and greens in the community, they're not just spending all their time on the production. They know that there's an infrastructure where they can market through food hubs and local and regional food systems that USDA has been involved in building, but that the State Department of Agriculture can also play a part in.
Well, thank you very much, Tim.
You bet.
KHOI is introducing our listeners to the Libertarian candidate for Iowa Secretary of Agriculture, Rick Stewart. Welcome, Rick. Could you tell us a little about yourself and why you're running for Secretary of Agriculture?
I would be happy to. First of all, thank you very much, Susan, for inviting me to do this. It's a great way to speak to Iowans about the issues, and I really applaud the station for accepting this responsibility and then, of course, the opportunity for somebody like me. I was born in Postville, Iowa. My father was a vocational agriculture instructor and had a 5-acre hobby farm. He grew that to a 20-acre hobby farm before he moved to Maquoketa, Iowa, which is where I was raised. And he grew that to an 80-acre hobby farm, except Of course, at 80 acres, you're starting to get into that line where it's real work. I got a degree from Kirkwood Community College in agricultural mechanics, but during the 2 years that I studied, I also had a hobby that turned into a business selling herbs and spices to natural food stores in Iowa to start with. That business today is a $200 million business with 300 employees. We sell to natural food stores everywhere in the country. Our biggest customer is somebody that a lot of your listeners have probably heard of. That would be Whole Foods stores. And it's quite successful. Those are great jobs, and I'm quite proud of that. I retired a few years ago, one of the first things that I did was I sort of started paying attention to politics. And one of the first things I learned when I started paying attention was that it appears that our public servants are no longer in the business of serving, but they're just in the business of perpetuating their own parties. And I call it tribalism, circling the wagons and protecting themselves from the other party. If one party has an idea, then the other party is automatically against it and vice versa. And that's not the way I was taught either when I was growing up or when I was in business or how I think today. I like to solve problems. I don't like to keep them running just because they're to my advantage. I decided to throw my hat in the ring in politics in order to bring solutions to people in a world which increasingly appears to be a world that neither party actually wants solutions. They just want to beat each other up.
Well, why did you choose to run for Secretary of Agriculture?
Well, my deep roots in ag, you know, I was that's what my dad did, that's how I grew up, was immersed in his teaching. I probably visited over 100 Iowa farms as a young boy, because my dad made a point of taking one of his children with him on every farm visit. Voc Ag instructors visit every single one of their students' farms every year, sometimes a couple of times a year. And so that was one of the bonding things that my dad did. And so I got my boots dirty for a long time watching the FFA boys, we called them back then. Now they have girls. I love the whole farm thing. I love being on those hobby farms and growing up that way. And that's why I got a degree in agricultural mechanics, so I could fix the tractor. I can still do that. It just seems natural that I was drawn to the whole field. I also have a background in economics with an MBA from the University of Chicago. And when I look at ag in Iowa, it's an economic operation. These people that farm are not doing it as a hobby or a charity or a church, a religion. They're doing it because they're trying to make money. They're small business people. These major challenges in Iowa right now for agriculture, and Iowa takes clean water from the sky above us, and we make it dirty, and then we ship it downstream to our southern relatives. There's certain things that the government's involvement makes sense, okay? And one of them is pollution. For now, let's just talk about surface water pollution, because that's the big issue that people are talking about. Because of the fact that we take that clean water from above and make it dirty and try and pass it down to our neighbors, that's surface water. A lot of people like to say, oh, well, that's just a farmer's problem. You know, they're putting on too many nitrates, blah, blah, blah. And I say, no. Now, this is a landowner problem. Bear in mind that almost all the land in Iowa is owned by farmers, but most of the landowners in Iowa are not farmers. Most landowners in Iowa are just like me. I own a city lot. And there's far more of us than there are farmers. There are only 80,000 Iowa farmers. There's 3 million Iowans. So it's not a problem for people that don't own land. It's only a problem for people who do own land, and that's every single person that owns land, small landowners, big landowners, the government, churches, anybody that owns land needs to not pollute the surface water. If you think about surface water, it's nice because it all goes into a waterway. Every drop of rain that falls on our land either goes left or right, and it all goes downhill. And if you map that, it's a very beautiful map of Iowa's waterways. We've got about 40 of them, and the exit of each of those waterways is the mouth of a river where it's basically going into another river. Well, if we organize those waterways, well, the watersheds, as co-ops, and every landowner in the watershed is a member of the co-op, and every member has one vote, and co-ops are always operating under democratic principles, then the government's role is to say, hey, we're going to monitor the quality of the water that that exits your watershed, and it has to be drinking water quality. And let's just make that 5 years from now. We don't care how you do it, okay, but we're going to measure it, and you have to do it. And so we're going to give you a little carrot and a big stick, because we're not going to let you pollute anymore. This is what governments should be doing. It says, no, you can't pollute. In any other industry, we already understand that. You know, we don't let people pollute just because they make more money by polluting. We say, no, you can't. So we can't have our watersheds polluting, and we're going to measure it. Now, this co-op only has one goal, really, and that's drinking quality water coming out the mouth of the river. And the timeline is a little bit flexible, but fast is better than slow. And so, okay, there you go. You've got the organizational structure. It's a co-op. You know who your members are. It's everybody that owns land in your watershed, and figure out how to fix that problem. The thing that people don't realize is we already have all the technology possible. There are plenty of Iowa farmers produce drinking water coming off their farm. That's voluntary action. It's not a high-tech problem. It's a low-tech problem. We know how to do it already. And let's empower the watershed co-op to do what they need to do to get everybody in line so that coming out of the watershed, the mouth of the river, it's drinking quality water.
How do they get drinking quality water coming off their land?
Well, the number one way is you just don't let that runoff run directly into the streams. You stop it so that it has a chance to clean itself and percolate down into the land that it's coming on. So you don't put your drain tile on a farm right into the river. And if you're like me, right, you could just look. A lot of people don't realize it, but I just have a house, and it's got shingles. And every time it rains hard, some of the asphalt comes off the shingles, and it goes into the gutters and down the downspout. And if it rains very hard, it flows through my yard and into my alley, and it goes into a storm sewer, and it goes straight into the Cedar River. Well, no, I can't do that. Okay, so what's going to happen? Do I have to build my own rain garden in my land? And do I have to have some kind of a filtration system for my downspouts? Well, I don't know the answer to that question, but I do know that I'm a person who's polluting the surface water, and that's not acceptable. So I don't know the answer, but I do know this, that every town and every city will have to fix their problem, and every farmer is going to have to fix their problem, and every church and everybody is going to have to fix the problem on their land, or they're going to have to band together. So I'm hoping that the city of Cedar Rapids will band together and solve their stormwater problem so I don't have to personally do anything really big. I'm probably going to have to pay some fees on my water bill. I already pay for recycling and for sewage water, right? So I'm not going to be surprised if they tell me it's going to be a little extra every month because we're going to do something, right? We're going to make a reservoir. We're going to put a wetland swamp between the storm sewer and the river. I don't know what they're going to do, but I do know this. Nobody's going to pay for it. So, you know, the people of Ames are not going to come over to Cedar Rapids and say, oh, we noticed you had a water problem here. Here's some money from us. We'll give it to you. No. People in Ames are going to fix the Ames problem. People in Cedar Rapids are going to fix the Cedar Rapids problem. People in Iowa aren't going to get any money from Illinois and Nebraska. And we're certainly not going to get any money from Washington. A lot of people are holding out. They say, well, we don't have to pay. Maybe Washington will pay. Some of my opponents are actually saying that. You know, we'll get money out of Washington. Well, Washington doesn't have money. Okay, well, the only thing Washington has is they have my tax money. If I send them a dollar, they're not going to send me a dollar back. They're going to send me 50 cents back if I'm lucky. So I don't want any Washington money. That costs way too much. Okay, I'll just keep the dollar here in Iowa. We'll use that money to fix the Iowa problems. If I'm a landowner, I'll fix my own problem. Or if I'm a city, maybe we'll fix our own problem. I don't know the answer to exactly how we'll organize, but I do know this. It's a watershed problem because the water from Cedar Rapids goes into the Cedar River, and the water from the farmers upstream goes into the Cedar. Everybody's water in the watershed goes into the Cedar River. That's the magic of watersheds. And we know who they all are. We can go to the county treasurer's office and say, who owns that land? And they know, okay? So like, okay, your name is John, and your name is Sally, and you, John, and you, Sally, you need to fix your problem. And by the way, we're going to start monitoring, and we'll let you know how you're doing. It's really very logical when you think about it, but we've divided up Iowa into 99 counties, and if you look at the lines, they're all straight lines. And then if you put the overlay of the watersheds on it, you realize that those straight lines, they don't make any sense at all in terms of watersheds. Nature made the watersheds, and humans made the straight lines. And it was convenient when we surveyed Iowa to make straight lines, and so we've got 99 counties. But when we're thinking about surface water, we should only think about watersheds.
This is KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM. I've been your host for today, Susan Franzen. You have been listening to selections from the Ames League of Women Voters Candidate Forum, Renee Tweed, Ted Rasmussen, Stacey Harridge, Jessica Reynolds, as well as interviews with the candidates for the Secretary of Agriculture, incumbent Republican Mike Naig, Democrat Tim Gannon, and Libertarian Rick Stewart. Recordings of the complete forum sponsored by the League of Women Voters this season will be available on their website, aimslwv.org. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Remember that you can also hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.